Hello and welcome to the Social Recruiting Show. I'm Katrina Collier. I am, of course, also the Robot Proof Recruiter and a candidate engagement speaker and keynote. I know, we never know which side I'm on, do we? I'm, of course, joined by my gorgeous co-host, the talent, a gorgeous co-host. I've had a big week, which will be explained as we go on. The talented talent acquisition professional, Glenn Martin. Welcome to the show.
Hola.
Again, as every week. And, of course, today I'm very, very excited because we are talking to Susan Bannister from Hope for Justice and the Slavery Alliance, but the Slavery Alliance part specifically. So welcome to the show, Susan.
Welcome, Susan.
Thank you very much.
That was like the worst introduction I've ever done, I think. Oh, no, there's the time I cracked up laughing and couldn't stop talking for 5 minutes. Yeah.
Well, let me take over the baton. Susan, as Katrina said, welcome to the show. And can you just kind of give us a little bit of, before we go into Hope for Justice and the Slavery Alliance, it'd be really interesting to kind of get your journey to that point. So can you just kind of tell us a little bit about life before Hope for Justice and the Slavery Alliance for you?
Yeah, it's interesting actually because obviously I'm now working in the world of anti-slavery, but I started off when I did my degree doing a law degree and I graduated as a law graduate. And it is amazing how many people who are in this anti-slavery world are from that background. But I actually didn't go into law. I ended up going into business and I specialised in education technology for nearly 20 years. And it was towards the sort of end of that career when somebody said to me, wouldn't it be great to live in a slave-free Bolton? And that's obviously where I'm from. And I remember thinking, what are you talking about? This, we don't have slaves in Bolton. And from I started to do some more work and looked into this and was just horrified at the statistics and felt it was something that I wanted to get more involved with. And an opportunity arose to work with the global anti-slavery charity Hope for Justice for a head of business development who were actually wanting to widen the work that they were doing with businesses. And so I've been with them for over 2 years now, and we set up Slavery Alliance last year, which is a business, it's a limited company wholly owned by the charity, and it's specifically to work with businesses looking at slavery in their supply chain and supporting businesses, because obviously it's a very niche area, people don't have expertise in their organisation, so we're supporting those businesses looking for it, rescuing victims and restoring lives.
But surely, I mean, slavery, I mean, it's just something from the 1800s, isn't it? We don't have slaves now, do we?
We were saying it prior to the show, weren't we?
Exactly.
It's kind of like we kind of think it happens outside the UK, right? And like you just the example you just gave, right? You were like, there's no slavery in Bolton. How did you go about finding more about that locally?
Well, I started obviously the great world of Google and went there and started finding out about the global statistics. So exactly, you were saying about this is something that we abolished in 1833. We didn't, because obviously slavery is still happening. We now have more slaves in the world than we've ever had before. Over 40 million people are enslaved across the globe and in different ways as well. It's basically modern slavery. It's an umbrella term for illegal exploitation for financial gain. And that can be in the form of sexual exploitation. It can be in the form of domestic servitude. More frequently, we're seeing forced labour cases. And in the UK, we are seeing it on the increase. And the interesting thing is, there's a big debate about, are we just getting better at identifying it, or is it on, you know, is there more modern slavery around? The honest answer is we don't know. In fact, I often clash with a colleague who doesn't think it's on the increase. He thinks we're getting better at identifying it. I'm not so sure. It is now the second largest crime in the world. So it is something that we need to be aware of.
Well, here's an interesting question from Michael Cruz. Welcome back, Michael. What countries are the biggest violators? So I know for a fact that the most people in the world are trafficked via London. So because we're the big hub, aren't we? Which is horrific. You guys aren't in London. So I can't say we. Me in London. So but do we know the biggest violators?
Yeah, there are a number. So the two biggest countries, I would guess, are pretty obvious. It's where we've got the largest population, China and India. There's some cultural reasons for that. But you also have countries like North Korea that have state-sponsored slavery as well. That's up in there as well.
I mean, actually, just to kind of give people some ideas and sort of quantify this, when you're dropping on your website, I mean, this is mind-blowing. 150 billion made each year from forced labor. So that's over $4,750 a second. If you want to put it in monetary terms, that's what we're looking at. And that's just all sickeningly incredible number.
But also when you look at, so with the 40 million.
Yes.
Yeah. Any given day in London, inside the M25, there are 20 million people. So it's twice the number of people inside London on a working day. It's almost twice the population of Australia, because the population of Australia is about 25. So you start like looking at it like that, and you start going, okay, this is a huge problem.
And interestingly, in the UK, we don't have any exact figures of the number of victims we have in the UK, but the Global Slavery Index last year estimated it as 136,000, which is the equivalent of a Oldham or a Watford. You know, it's a massive, massive town. Yeah.
When you think of it like that, so it's quite extraordinary.
Very extraordinary. So tell us how, you know, Hope for Justice and Slave Free Alliance are kind of making a really sort of positive inroads in impacting and reducing this.
That's a big question.
Yeah, mate, I know.
Because it's all different parts.
But just as an overview, you know, how does Hope for Justice and Slave Free Alliance address or start to address that?
Okay, well, we do it in different ways. So our mission is to end slavery by doing four things: preventing exploitation, rescuing victims, restoring lives, and reforming society. And each one of those is really key. We can't, you know, that they are intertwined, really. So the prevention work we do, if I talk about Hope for Justice to start off with, we work in a number of countries. We're now, I think, in 32 locations across 5 continents. And we do a lot of work in Africa, in Uganda, Ethiopia, and Zimbabwe specifically, looking at working with street children who get trafficked into the cities. But we also have self-help groups where we're actually working in communities and helping them to support themselves with little cooperatives so that they don't have to, you know, get into the poverty that means that they sell children or let their children go off with people into the cities for a better life, which they're clearly not going to get. And these self-help groups are now growing. We started off with, it was mainly women in the self-help groups, but we now have male self-help groups. But interesting, what we're finding with gender is where we're sort of educating men on gender inequality, it's actually improving things for the whole community. But these are having real success now, and actually, you know, for preventing somebody becoming a victim is as good or if not better than somebody being rescued from as being a victim. But in places like Cambodia, where we work a lot with the authorities there, who refer children to us all the time, mainly young girls who are being trafficked from villages into sex trafficking. And the numbers and the ages of these girls is it's heartbreaking. I'm known as a weeper in our office. Every time we have stories, I'm always the one that I get very emotional. And actually, I don't think that's a bad thing. But, you know, we've had girls as young as 3 being trafficked. And it's heartbreaking that people would, heartbreaking that this would happen. So we work with the girls and the children as well in Africa. The main thing we try and do is to get them back into a home environment, because actually that's the best place for them to grow up, to get that childhood back. And that takes time. It's not always easy. So, for example, in Africa, we've had young children who've been trafficked to the city when they were 6. We might pick them up when they are 8, and you know they have no idea where they're from.
Yeah.
So it's the social workers that we have working for us are amazingly dedicated, and they will keep on trawling through, you know, missing people reports, etc., working with the authorities to find out where they've come from. And then even then, it's a long journey to make sure that that's a safe environment for them to go back to, and to restore the relationship with any family members that they may have. But it is totally worth it. And, you know, we educate as well. So very often these children have gone out of education for some time. So we do catch up education. Yeah. And the aim is that they will leave us with a qualification that means that they can get a job and restore their lives, basically. So that's
one of the big differences. I mean, having been out to Uganda, into Kampala, the slums, working with the frontline staff, that this isn't, I'm sorry if I offend anybody who's listening, but this isn't a charity that sweeps up children, institutionalizes them into an orphanage and forces them into the system. It's very much child empowerment. It is slightly different for the girls because they need to be protected more. But certainly with the boys, it's, would you like to get back to a safe and loving home? Do you want to get home? Do you want to come in? So they come into the lighthouses for 3 to 4 months while they look for their family or a very safe alternative. Mm-hmm. Give them the education. What we would have happen is we would go into the slums and the kids would come back and some of them just wanted to sleep, a hot shower, some food, change of clothes. They didn't want to necessarily, because actually they can be very entrepreneurial in the slums as well, can't they, which is the fascinating thing. And also why the outreach works so well.
Yeah.
I
just always really want to labour that point because I think it's really important that people understand that Hope for Justice isn't just any charity. It isn't just forcing children down a specific path. And in fact, when I was there last time, Uganda had revoked all of the licenses for all of the charities to get them to all prove that they were genuinely helping. And Hope for Justice was one of the first to get it back while we were there, which was also incredible.
Exactly. So, it'd be really wicked to come back to that. I've just seen Marvin's question on Facebook.
I've seen Debbie's wanted to answer.
Both of them. Both are really good questions. So let's go.
Okay, hang on. Will we do Debbie first? Because Debbie was first.
Hey, Debbie.
So do you find the authorities want to help you on your mission from all very difficult in Africa from what I have seen firsthand, but it would be interesting from a local UK or USA point of view. Debbie's in the US.
Okay, well, in the US, they don't have a Modern Slavery Act as we have in the UK. California has a Transparency in the Supply Chain Act, which actually preceded the Modern Slavery Act over here. And that's why we added in Section 54 to the Modern Slavery Act, which brings businesses into that realm of public protection. Just to let you know what Section 54 says, it basically says any business with a turnover of £36 million or more has to publish on an annual basis a modern slavery statement outlining everything that they've done to eradicate slavery in their business, but their supply chain as well, which is having an amazing impact, which is really, really good. But it's a state by state situation in America. We have an amazing team over there led by a former FBI agent, very experienced. And so he has a lot of contacts that help him. So the authorities are definitely on board with supporting the work that we do. In the UK, we work really closely with the police and the GLAA, and it works really well because sometimes, well, we know that victims don't want to speak to the police very often. If they're from another country, they trust the police in their own country. So having a charity to come alongside and work with them is really helpful because we can often protect, support, rescue them, make sure that they are looked after in the national referral mechanism, which is like the state-sponsored support system for victims. And we can then, over time, hopefully get into a place where they do want to speak to the police and prosecute their perpetrator. Interestingly, in Africa, it is a little bit more difficult.
It's very different. So having spoken to Robert, I probably shouldn't say his name, but I love him so much, who works so closely with the authorities out there, and it can be really, really tough. They are trying to get the authorities to not see the children as, they're thieves or they're like lower class. Like there's this funny thing when we go into the slums that they're gobsmacked that these people from Europe come and talk to the kids. There's like this, but they thieve. Of course they do. They're trying to eat, you know, they're trying to survive. Yeah. So there's been quite a lot of education there, and Robert certainly works closely with the authorities, but there are some really horrific stories of, like, you know, a child who was actually innocent ending up in an adult jail. And when they intervened, he got given a tougher sentence, and the guilt that the staff carry, which is again, why I can never do enough. I can never, it's complicated. So Debbie's question is quite big, because it depends on the country and the attitude and the...
It does, and but it's interesting, in Cambodia, we have been working a lot more closely with the authorities, and they have been so impressed with the catch-up education that we've given in our Shine School over there, that they've actually asked us to extend it and widen it and have more children go through that, which has been brilliant. And also, I know our legal policy director, Philippa, she went out to Cambodia to talk to the government about how to set up a national referral mechanism over there, which has been fantastic. So we are making progress. And we also take police forces out to these countries to work with the police over there to educate them as to how to prosecute, etc. So.
So let's do have the availability of funding. So
definitely
going into, because we've got employers and recruiters and people like that on the show. So a good time for Marvin's question. And Marvin is on the show next week as well, in case Marvin has forgotten. Are you calling out companies that create import products supported by slavery? Seems like the Me Too movement could be more, it could be extended to that area.
Yeah, we don't. It's interesting.
It's not a witch hunt, is it?
It's not a witch hunt. And actually, we wouldn't call out businesses, because you've got to be careful.
They
don't always know, and they're all on the journey. So, are there some complicit businesses out there? Yes, there are. Will we work to prosecute with the police and make sure that any perpetrators are brought to court? Of course we will. But we have worked with a whole number of businesses that have found victims in their business in the UK and abroad. And we are working with them to find a solution for that victim. We're very victim-centric, and we always put the victim first over the authorities, over the businesses, everybody. So it's about making sure that they're protected. And so, but what we do expect is businesses that work with us, businesses that become part of Slavery Alliance, that they must do something if they find it. We would not expect them to do nothing. And there will be... probably some sort of financial recompense. But actually, before the Modern Slavery Act, we had the United Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. And in there, there's a very big piece on remediation. So businesses should be looking at this anyway.
It was funny when I first heard you talk about it. I mean, having, you know, been out to Africa twice already by this point to support Hope for Justice. Have you just noticed it's tipping it down? Sorry, it's like completely distracting me out the window. Don't look out the window.
It's always raining in Manchester.
All right. It's like, it's just pouring all of a sudden. Sorry, completely distracting. Oh, wow. But when I first heard you talk, and you were talking about like the signs and then the thinking, so I'm like, I'm a one person business. So my Disrupt HR videos, I'm getting the captions done for a fiver kind of thing. And I'm not thinking, well, hang on, is the person actually getting paid properly who's doing that for me? Like, and you got me thinking about every service that I use is the person. Yeah. So even though I understand Marvin's question, and it could be like really obvious, we think of fruit picking and the car washes and the nail salons, but it's way beyond that, isn't it? It can be white collar workers as well. Is that right?
I guess is there not a sort of, as you said, is there not an emphasis on businesses to at least try and, you know, get some transparency in terms of their supply chain as far as they can, as far as, you know, they can access the information. It's, I mean, it's not exactly a massively time consuming, you know, kind of, you know, action realistically, is it? I mean,
for some businesses, but I actually, I mean, the act of the Section 54 part of the act is about all about transparency, to make sure people and businesses are doing their due diligence and make it easy for consumers like ourselves to be able to go and have a look at the statement to see, are they doing enough? The problem is with the act, it doesn't have any teeth. So when you say you have to write a statement and put it on your website, you could actually legitimately say, we are doing absolutely nothing. That statement has to be signed by somebody of the exec. And if it's signed and put on their website, that's actually legally compliant. I mean, it wouldn't look good for them.
Really,
but
well.
Actually, No, yeah. So there is that we've just had a review of the Act, and some of the recommendations actually they gave guidelines to report on six areas. They are now looking at making those six areas mandatory. And interestingly, in Australia, where they've just introduced the Modern Slavery Act, that those six areas they have to report on over there. So I think that will come in soon.
Okay.
So frontline, your HR, you've got employees. Mm. So rather than supply chain, your actual employees.
Yeah.
I know you've talked before about some of the signs of realizing that somebody in your employees is trapped in slavery or has been trafficked. And
yeah.
So we talk like debit cards and things like that. Can you go into that a little bit, like what they can do to just raise some awareness, other than obviously go onto the Slavery Alliance website and book some training?
Exactly. Well, we do. I mean, there's some very, thank you very much. Yes, you can get training from us. There's some simple things that you can do as HR, and it's checking data against data. Yep. And you can do this manually. We had a recruitment agency that started off doing this using a spreadsheet. So check addresses. Do you have anybody living in the same address? Now, it could be a family relation, so there could be a really innocent explanation, but it should actually give you a red flag. Does the employee bank account match their name?
Do they have time to get access to the money?
Yeah, because what we found is a typical kind of traffickers route in the UK is they bring people over to the UK, they will put them in a house, very poor accommodation generally, they will take them to get their national insurance number, they will then take them to a recruitment agency and act as their cousin, interpreting for them. Very often they will go to get a bank account. Sometimes they use the same bank account for a number of people, but they control the bank card so that person doesn't have access to the money. Then the recruitment agency finds a lovely job for them in a legitimate business. It could be a big brand business. We find that as well. And that the victim goes to work. And very often the victim is told by the trafficker that they've got a debt to pay off. So it could be several months before that person even challenges the trafficker to, you know, am I ever going to see the money? And that's when generally the threats, the beatings and threats to family back home start. And that's what keeps people trapped in that situation.
Wow.
So if a business is recruiting themselves directly, they can make sure that that they're not living in a house with other people. They can ask questions. You know, it's really simple questions that could really sort of highlight something's not quite right. So what did you do at the weekend? They don't very often won't know where they are, never mind what do they do at the weekend. And so there'll be certain things that indicate this isn't quite right. Are they getting dropped off by the same person? Are they a little bit disheveled? What is their home circumstance? You know, are they coming towards a black eye?
Isn't there a period of time as well where they seem quite calm and then when they realize they're trapped, actually kick off, and that's usually where you can see a personality change?
Yeah.
I'm sure you mentioned that.
That's right. Yeah. So very often, because they think they're paying off the debt to get to the UK, the house, they're even told that they have to pay for the national insurance. They're told to pay, they have to pay for the bank account. It's ridiculous. They have to pay for the job. So they have this perceived debt and they get maybe £20 a week when they're earning £300 a week. And so
that's for food and everything, Glenn. It's literally for everything.
Yeah. Yeah,
wow.
So it's interesting that you say that, because actually when we have identified victims, it's very often through what we do in the community. We have community outreach workers who will go into the communities, vulnerable communities, but also trains like food banks and soup kitchens and other charities who are doing work with the homeless. And it's actually because they can't afford to eat that they end up in these places, and that's how they can get identified. So the more awareness for these organisations, the better it is for us to identify victims.
And something you mentioned, kind of some of the slightly stereotypical kind of jobs that we might associate with slavery, i.e. car washes, etc. Are there any, you know, if I'm a desk side recruiter, I'm out there trying to find business, work with businesses. Are there any particular industry sectors that you've just been like completely blown away by the fact that you've discovered kind of slavery in in those types of industry sectors, not naming any particular businesses, but is it, I mean, how widespread is it in, from, you know, a job profile perspective?
You can't, I would say it tends to be the low skilled working workforce that you're looking at.
But not always.
Because it is quite a sophisticated crime and quite complicated because we're dealing with human beings.
Yeah.
But generally where you need more skill, somebody's English might be better. But even then, if they've been picked up in a period of vulnerability, then they could get trafficked. But it, any sort of low-skilled jobs such as cleaning, catering, waste management.
Hospitality, that sort of thing maybe even.
Sorry? Yeah.
I was thinking, you know, like you say, kind of low skilled. There's a boundary within the sort of hospitality industry that could be, you know, classed as kind of low, no skilled, and then, you know, a little bit higher up. So
but most companies will have some sort of role that's like low skilled.
Yeah,
be it the cleaning staff, be it
sometimes the backup
anything,
house,
kitchen staff,
as it were.
I would say, and warehouse distribution. So we have had FTSE 100 companies who have found victims of modern slavery in their organisation in the UK. So we cannot just think because it's their big brand, they've got everything sorted. It is a very prevalent crime. It's just horrendous.
Because we have quite a few that are listening from the US. Which I mean, we happen to know you wouldn't know, but it's the same in the US because I know that I've read of where Hope for Justice have intervened and saved victims over there as well. This is a global issue. I appreciate the three of us happen to be sitting in the UK, but it is absolutely global.
Yeah, we've rescued victims in the US in situations of forced labor, but also sexual exploitation, domestic servitude. It was interesting. One of the cases in the US, there was a woman who was kept as a slave in domestic servitude we're talking over 20 years, and she was in her 60s, and she became so ill. She was from the Philippines. She was so ill. She had to be taken to hospital by the family that had trafficked her, and by some miracle, she only spoke a certain dialect of Filipino, and the nurse came from her region.
Wow.
And she was able to tell the nurse that this was the case. That nurse got in touch with the FBI, and it just so happened that the FBI agent in California was friends with our FBI agent in Nashville. Managed to rescue.
Someone was taking care of her. So on LinkedIn, Liz Dowling has asked, hi Liz. Oh. Yes, we're still recovering from Liz's hangover from Wednesday night. So we all went to the in-house recruitment awards together. So as individuals, where can we go to get more info on how to support people? So obviously Hope for Justice and the Slave Free Alliance website.
Definitely. Interesting about supporting people. If you've got a business and you want to maybe support victims once they're ready to get back into work, there's a fantastic scheme called Bright Futures, which is it was started by City Hearts and the Co-op, but it now has, I think, 50 businesses signed up to it, as well as charities like ourselves. And it's about getting victims back into legitimate work, because actually that's what they want, and actually that's a really key part of their restoration.
Just slightly connected to that, in terms of how do we go about supporting people, very much like Katrina, if you're kind of sitting there watching the show, or you've got kind of got that inclination to want to get involved in charity work, and you maybe don't want to do the traditional volunteering route, although that's, you know, very credible, you want to use your skills. So it's very much like Katrina, your kind of recruitment HR skills to, you know, to help and support Slave Free Alliance or Hope for Justice. How do we do that? How do we access that? How can we help you?
Funny you should say that. We have got an amazing program called Connecting HR. It started off as Connecting HR Africa,
but it's now for justice.
It is HR for Justice. And actually, it's actually taking your skills to our Hope for Justice team and training our team out in Africa and also in Cambodia. And you have to raise a certain amount of money, obviously, but actually, as Katrina will tell you, it is a life-changing experience, I think, for everybody. But our staff just get so much so much out of it.
Yeah.
You know, so, it's the effort that people will go to support them and to and to train them, and they just take everything on board,
everything,
don't they?
Everything. So to put a bit of meat on the bones to that. So Ian Pettigrew came up with this idea in 2015 to take a team of HR professionals, in this case to Uganda, to work with the staff and the carers of the street children. So to provide them with whatever they needed, resilience training, coaching, time management, whatever it may be that they needed. He took a team very successfully. We all had to raise £2,000 each and pay for our airfare. And then they went back in 2017. Sorry, hang on, I've missed you. No, I haven't. 17, 18. And then this year, new country, went to Ethiopia. So I've been out twice with my kind of ring-in HR skills. Then next year, there are two trips planned. So there's a trip to, I believe they're going to Ethiopia again, and the dates are not confirmed. And there's a trip to Cambodia. So if anyone would like to know, please send me a message and I will get you the information. You do have a requirement to raise a certain amount of money, and obviously you need to have HR skills. That's what they're looking for. So
and
it's my extraordinary.
My co-host is being very modest there, because Katrina does a lot for Justice for Slavery Alliance. And so if you've ever attended the Disrupt HR London event, or one of the Disrupt HR events that Katrina organises, certainly percentage of the proceeds go to Hope for Justice for each event.
The percentage of the vendor ticket and the sponsors.
And your book, which effectively anything that you would potentially pay yourself from that is completely and 100% going.
So basically, the royalties. Sorry, I'm trying to find the page that talks about it. So yes, just so that they know I'm telling them, oh, I can't line up that way.
there you go.
So it explains about Connecting HR Africa and how it changed my life. So the royalties. So, I mean, the book's published through Kogan Page, so I get a small percentage of each book, but instead of getting it, I'm giving it to Hope for Justice, because I can't do enough, because it has personally helped me and healed me, and I just can't raise enough money for them.
And just one final really,
I feel like
really
I'm
nice
foot in the piece. Corner.
Yeah, you are 100%. So obviously Tuesday night was the final kind of Disrupt HR London for the year, for 2019. Ian was there. He spoke and he gave Katrina. Definitely. That 100%, right? But he gave Katrina a very lovely gift.
Oh, that's reflecting on my. Did you know I was getting that, Susan?
I did know you're getting that.
Oh, my gosh. I was like a sobbing mess on the stage. It was very professional.
For people that don't know, Katrina, what do you have in your hand? What is that?
So every victim that is freed, they put a padlock on the wall, and there is a freedom wall in the Hope for Justice office, which is just covered. I don't know how many are there. Do you happen to know the number, Susan?
We haven't got all of them up there. We need more space.
We need more space. And this is one of them. This is, I'm very aware I'm reflecting my screen, which is like, I really don't want to do it. I can't quite get it in the right place. Now you can see Glenn, my outdoors, whichever one. There's a video that they have been showing recently of Thekla, that's not her actual name, who was, her parents died, didn't they? And she ended up in the slums in Uganda. She ended up in sex trafficking, and eventually they just threw her in a ditch. I'm going to cry. The honour to have been given her specific padlock as a thank you for what I do. I have to raise money. So I'm Reward Gateway, Freeformers, Yapster, DDI and Logic Melon and others have all generously donated directly to the charity. And that's if you sponsor Disrupt HR London, that's what you do. And I price it in the number of children, because the two-year program that they go into. So they come into the lighthouses for 3 to 4 months, and then they're in the program for 2 years as they return to a safe and loving home. That includes counselling, the social workers. It includes parenting skills training. It includes all sorts of stuff. It works out at £320 per child. For the Americans, it's about, $420 at the moment. They stretch the money so far. So I can't raise enough. I just can't.
That's awesome.
It's like going out there is life changing. So.
Yeah. And if you do want to do straightforward kind of volunteering, I believe, looking on the website, there's volunteering kind of opportunities in Manchester office at the moment. Susan, yeah. Everyone, is that right? Nashville?
Yes.
Is that right?
In Nashville. What's going on in Nashville? I just think of guitars.
And yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where our American office is based.
And what can they do if they volunteer there? Or the head office even? Yeah. How can they help?
It's a variety of things. Very often, for a lot of it is to do with our partnerships, which is to do with fundraising and speaking and just, you know, filing, organizing, representing us at shows, things like that. But we also have, especially in Manchester, we have opportunities for any lawyers out there as well to do some advocacy work with us. And we do often have a lot of lawyers coming in on a regular basis doing pro bono work, which is fantastic. We couldn't do it without them.
I would, if you wouldn't mind, a bit of a subject change, because, again, recruiters are listening. So can you explain a little bit about that recruitment agency that was up to no good that was? I just think it's very relevant and they understand what can happen.
The interesting thing is with recruitment agencies, one of the things you'll know or you'll learn about traffickers is they're very entrepreneurial, they're innovative, and they're always looking for the easy way in. And they have discovered that the recruitment agency is that easy way in. So not only are they looking at taking people and bringing victims over and taking them to the recruitment agency, they're doing a number of things. They're targeting the agencies. So in a case that we were involved in, which ended up being the largest anti-trafficking case in Europe, they actually put somebody into a recruitment agency, and obviously she was their best employee and was able to just get all of the trafficked people into jobs and basically manage them from within. So that was an interesting one that we approached the agency because they were in denial about this person saying, well, she's our best employee, you know. Really didn't want to hear that news. But again,
so was she groomed into that role? Surely you've got some kind of ethics where you go, I'm not going to screw over people to that extent.
Was she
just like, yeah, I'll take the money and run, I need my Gucci shoes, you know.
She had a relationship with one of the main traffickers.
You're not going to go into that openly. She got lured into that. No sane person would go into that.
But there was a case in another agency in the Northwest where one of the people working at the agency actually was getting money to put victims into a legitimate business. He was prosecuted earlier on this year. And interestingly, the director of that firm, the operations director, was also convicted for aiding and abetting a trafficker because he had been to see where these people had lived and hadn't done anything about it, and he got a suspended sentence. So it's interesting that actually now the recruitment agencies are being targeted, and I think every person who owns a recruitment agency needs to be aware of that and just keep an eye on your staff. You know, just keep an eye on who they're having relationships with, etc., and if they're bringing in a lot of people. But also just to understand that traffickers will always come in and pretend to be a cousin, and they're just there to interpret. Yeah. And that's actually a warning sign as well.
If the person's not speaking recruitment for agencies, themselves.
Yeah, to recruitment agencies, just don't be grateful for every bit of business you receive, right? Do your due diligence on the business and the company, right?
Definitely. And I know how hard it is because back in the day, I know I don't look it old enough, but back in the 90s, I worked for Adia Alfred.
When you were 10.
Before we became a deco. And, you know, I was on the temp desk and I had to find road sweepers and I had to find security. And you were talking some, numbers. And it was always it's a really tough gig. So I do appreciate how difficult it is. But actually, there's a real impact.
But I think, the point you made as well, that the operations director saw where these people were living. And one of the things that upset Ian Pettigrew so much about that slavery ring that was broken, and it was 400 people. It was in the press, so if you haven't seen it, it's very easy to find.
Panorama program as well on BBC on iPlayer.
Absolutely. But when he thinks of the conditions that they were living in, and they're washing in the canals, including in winter, it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. And interesting when you're talking about the canal, because one of the businesses that they were working in, subsequently, the HR team had said to me, oh, after they found out about this case, they said, oh, yeah, we knew they were a bit smelly. And actually, I think that's heartbreaking, that had that company had awareness training and they would have looked at it in a slightly different light and would have probably reported it to HR saying, I think something doesn't feel quite right. And I think I've said to you, haven't I, that, you know, that gut feeling of something not feeling quite right, just never ignore it because actually it is worth investigating. Exactly, there may be an innocent explanation, but actually there's often something else going on.
And to be fair, you don't have to kind of, you know, ask too many questions of the client, you know, and kind of almost interrogate them when you sign them up. There's enough information on the internet. You go into the company's house, you just kind of do a bit of a due diligence audit trail on businesses and to see if it stacks up. See if it all stacks up in terms of, you know, the information that you can find.
I think it's a bit hard though, because you and I have done like the high-end contract or perm. We haven't done so much that volume high street. I think with the volume, it could be quite tough. But there must be some automation that could go into play to check this stuff.
I guess I'm talking more about, okay, you get that first client.
New client.
Right. Yeah. And kind of, you know, and really start thinking about who you're engaging with so you know more about the business, right?
Yeah.
And asking questions about the business is what recruiters do. We need to understand what your business is, you know, kind of why you're needing to hire, what your clients are, if it's a B2B to C. So I think, you know, some of these questions being asked early doors could start to sort of, you know, I guess highlight red flags. Just don't be ignorant.
I think educating businesses as well to know what they should be paying for temporary labour. When you add on insurance, et cetera, make sure that they understand that this is the minimum with zero margin for a recruitment agency. This is the minimum that somebody should get paid. And if they are finding an agency that's coming to them saying, we can do it for cheaper than that, you know who you are.
I mean, there's no magic commercial model that makes one company 30-40% cheaper. Somebody making a loss, and somebody in that supply chain is making a massive loss, right?
So the awareness training that obviously we know you run here in the UK is it from Nashville as well that people can?
Yes, we do. Yeah, we've done. We've actually been working with a bank out there and train their employees on awareness raising, because actually the banks play a key part. Obviously, this is where the traffickers are coming from bank accounts, because they very often open a bank account in somebody else's name and then run up debts and cause all sorts of fraud. So,
I mean, when you hear some of the horror stories, and the ones that were just found recently, and they can't get their bodies back to, it's Vietnam, isn't it? Because the families in Vietnam can't afford, and the British government is refusing to send, will only send as ashes, not, and it's like, oh God, it's trauma that the families go through is
That's an interesting case, because obviously that's being treated as a people smuggling case, which is treated by law differently from human trafficking. So if people smuggle, and what often happens, especially with Vietnamese being brought over to the UK, they are paying absolute fortune to be brought to the UK. When they get here, very often, that's when the trafficking happens. That's when they're put into looking after cannabis farms or nail bars. So actually, even though it's been treated as a people smuggling case, I think personally, it could very well be a human trafficking case. The interesting thing, if it was a human trafficking case, it's a crime against the person. So the business, the government would have. You know, they wouldn't be treating it as a crime against the state, which they do with people smuggling. So it would be a fine line,
isn't it? Because even though they may volunteer themselves, they're desperate to leave a situation and they're not really sure what they're walking into, and they're vulnerable to.
Completely, yeah.
You know, it's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, this is a depressing Friday show. this is just why the royal tester in the book, my sponsor. I cannot raise enough money. It's just so complicated and so big.
I would say we don't want to leave it too depressing, you know, seeing people.
We are making a difference.
It is making a difference. And actually, if you go to the Panorama program, you just see the people that were actually trafficked in that case. Mm. And as you said, Katrina, there was an estimate of 400 people in that case. The traffickers made £2 million out of these people's misery. That, you know, those people now have their lives restored. And actually, that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
and
it is.
You know,
it is.
There are positive stories.
And I think what I so love about when I started the going to Africa, it was ReTrack, you know, operating separately from Hope for Justice. And I think what I love so much about what's doing and the impact that is being created is we're starting at the beginning. So with the outreach, is stopping the flow of the kids into the slums, which is stopping the vulnerability of them being trafficked through London, global hub. And by working with Hope for Justice together, it's just working so much better and having such a great impact. So I love
and
that.
Building awareness, right? I mean, it's an awareness thing. You know, kind of, you know, the different channels you can utilize to build that awareness. So, you know, we're not all kind of like, oh, doesn't happen locally. But if we have that awareness, then we're looking for it. And if we're looking for it, then we're going to be more due diligence and, you know, it's going to have a positive impact. So, you know, I think such an important topic.
And that's the interesting thing with Slavery Alliance now, with the businesses that have joined. They've joined for the majority have joined because they want to do something and they want that practical support. And I always describe Slavery Alliance as just putting our arm around the business saying, you know what, you know, we expect to find modern slavery somewhere in your organization or supply chain. It's fine.
Yeah.
If we find it, we've got it together and we will support them. And actually, I think that's reassuring. But the other thing is all of the profits go back into Hope for Justice. So it's businesses, it's a win-win for them. They're actually paying for a really top service that they can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And then also the profits are doing some good and they can feel good about themselves.
Absolutely. Mervyn's got a good question here. Is there a unified effort among the non-profits to share intelligence stories and efforts on the issues? There is. There's the one that Beatrice is involved with, Princess Beatrice.
Oh yes, yes. She's set up an organisation to bring charities together, and very often we will share work. So, for example, you know, we work with the Salvation Army. They actually a lot of the victims that we work with go into their housing. We also have a joint project with an organisation. Organization called the Jericho Foundation in Birmingham, where we actually have one of our independent modern slavery advocates based in their organization to make sure that the victims that they have going through their organization get the support that they need, but also get back into work. So you'll find that there is a great integration, and Bright Futures is a fantastic way of doing that. They have they are bringing together businesses and charities and with the victim at the centre of it. And I think that's fantastic.
Perfect.
Yeah, fantastic.
Right.
Fantastic.
So, Susan, thank you. If people want to find
you,
LinkedIn, Susan Bannister.
LinkedIn, Susan Bannister's got one N. Can I just stress?
One N
in Bannister.
If you filled your name out on the bottom in full.
I know.
You just went in with Susan Bannister with one N. If you can't find me. You guys can find me everywhere. I'm everywhere. And
Susan,
I will direct you to Susan.
Susan Bannister on Twitter. Susan B on Instagram. And on LinkedIn. So you can find me.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for all of that. Subject close to my heart. Very important.
Thank
you, everybody, for joining us. There's been quite a few in. I think I've answered all your questions. We haven't missed any. And we shall see you next week, where Mr. Marvin Smith will be joining us. I actually know who we have a guest next week. We're actually organized this time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's been like we have them, but we haven't like mentioned or slotted them in. So, but thank you so much again. And everyone, we shall see you next week at 10 a.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Because I do actually know what the time is this week. bye, everyone.
Have a good weekend.
Bye.